Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Welcoming back to the show, Kevin Dillon is here. He is the Executive Director of the Connecticut Airport Authority. And Kevin, thank you for being here. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, it was huge news in the Connecticut Post all over our area here. It was Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim, actually, who said this would be a great fit for the Sikorsky Airport because right now the city of Bridgeport sort of foots the bill, essentially, for the Sikorsky Airport. And there are now rumblings that the CAA could take over. First and foremost, how likely is that?
Well, we've been cooperating with the city for a number of years. In fact, at one point, we did have a managerial presence down at the airport to assist the city. The CAA believes there's tremendous opportunity at Sikorsky. You know, for a long time, we have been trying to attract folks from Fairfield County, particularly lower Fairfield County up to Bradley. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of those folks continue to utilize the New York airport. So we think there's a real opportunity to develop some level of commercial service at Sikorsky and keep those Connecticut residents at home. You know, the reality is, as I said, we have been discussing this with the city for quite some time. And our involvement could range from, you know, potentially just providing managerial advice to the city in terms of running the airport, right up to a full acquisition of the airport.
I mean, would you like to take over the airport? Like the would you like to take the whole acquisition? I mean, I know some business experts in Bridgeport would love for the CAA to just take over instead of the city running it.
Yeah, I think you know, from the CAA's perspective, we would very much like to be involved in the direct operation of the airport. You know, what form that takes. You know, there's a lot of conversation still to be had with the city. You know, that could be, as I said, an actual acquisition. It could be a long-term lease of the facility from the city, or it could be simply an operating agreement with the city. You know, I do believe the CAA has the aviation experience and the resources to invest into Sikorsky to bring the airport to its full potential. So we are very interested and anxious to be directly involved in the operation of the airport.
Kevin Dillon is here. He's with the Connecticut Airport Authority. He's the executive director. And, you know, and we're kind of picking his brain a little bit about the rumblings about potentially seeing the CAA take over Sikorsky Airport right here in our listening area. Kevin, what would be some of the biggest things you would change about Sikorsky or you would add on to Sikorsky currently?
Well, I think the important thing is to make sure that the airport moves forward with its recently approved master plan. The FAA approves a master plan that includes development of the facility for every airport that takes federal dollars across the country. So Sikorsky recently had their master plan approved, and I think there's a lot of great projects in there. You know, we're talking about making sure that the airfield is in full compliance with all of the FAA requirements and safety regulations. But we're also talking about the addition of terminal facilities at the airport, because the ultimate goal of the CAA would be to bring commercial service to the airport. I mean, naturally, we want to continue to enhance the general aviation presence at the airport. That's been the mainstay of Sikorsky and will most likely be the primary business of the airport going forward. But I do think there's a real opportunity to bring commercial service. And I think, you know, we have the opportunity to leverage some of our relationships with airlines at Bradley for the benefit of Sikorsky.
Now, my understanding, Kevin, is that the runway currently at Sikorsky is not going to get extended, but it's pretty short, to put it simply. So what commercial airlines or what commercial flights could we see come to Sikorsky if CAA were to take over?
Yeah, there are certain classes of commercial passenger aircraft that can operate on the runway length at Sikorsky. For example, the Airbus 220, that aircraft is being operated by Breeze Airways. It's also going to be operated by a number of other airlines that represent potential entrants into the Sikorsky market. You know, there's also a lot of development, you know, in terms of future aircraft that do not need an extended length of runway in order to take off. So we're also looking to the future as to, you know, when these new aircraft are developed and what role Sikorsky can play in regard to that commercial market.
Okay, so let's get down to the nitty-gritty, Kevin. Again, nothing has been set in stone for anyone who's just tuning in. This is not breaking news that the CIA has already taken over Sikorsky, but there are a lot of talks around the idea of it, and I'm just getting Kevin's perspective on it if, in fact, that happens. Where can people go? Where do you think, like, some destinations people will be able to potentially fly out of Sikorsky and head to if, in fact, the CIA took over?
Well, I think, you know, certainly Florida destinations are always popular destinations out of the Northeast. But we would also look to bring a level of business connectivity into the airport as well. So you'd be potentially looking at service into Washington, D.C., Chicago, Philadelphia, connections through major hubs so that you can offer a wide-ranging level of service and to make sure that the city and the region had that key business connectivity that's so important to overall economic development.
Mm-hmm. What about the Carolinas? I've had people ask about that.
Well, I think that's always a possibility. I think, you know, first and foremost, you know, airlines look to go to the destinations where they have a good segment of the population looking to travel.
Mm-hmm.
That is always those Florida destinations. And as I said, you know, airlines look to connect through their hub locations. But there are a couple of niche carriers that I do believe service into the Carolinas. Certainly, you know, service into Myrtle Beach is always a popular destination as well. Those are always possibilities.
Do you worry at all, Kevin, that this is going to be rough competition then with Bradley, also owned by the CIA?
No, I don't. I think the market area for Sikorsky and the market area for Bradley are very complementary. You know, as I said earlier, we've spent a fair amount of money advertising in the Fairfield County area. And while we were able to capture some of that traffic, the vast majority of folks in that area are using other airports, and in particular, the New York airports.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is a real opportunity for Connecticut to provide a service that its residents need and want, and to keep some of those travel dollars at home here in the state.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see it as a conflict with Bradley at all.
And I think it's a winning deal. I think economically, I think for, you know, for travel, convenience, to bring money back into Sikorsky rather than dealing with deficits every year. I'm just wondering, what's the soonest we could see this deal reached?
Well, I'm hopeful, you know, that within the next 30 to 60 days, we will have some level of term sheet with the city. I mean, naturally, it still requires the approval of the city council and city leadership. And on our side, it requires the approval of the Connecticut Airport Authority Board. But I feel confident that within the next, as I said, 30 to 60 days, we will have a term sheet level understanding as to what our level of involvement will be. And then that naturally progresses to a full agreement. But once you reach that term sheet level understanding, there should be nothing that stands in the way of finalizing an agreement going forward.
Well, I know when that time comes, I certainly would love to have you back on the show. Kevin Dillon, Executive Director of the Connecticut Airport Authority, thank you so much for taking the time, and we'll see what happens.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
Jeffrey fell in love with Maria's art, bought her first major work, and hired her in 1995 to buy art for his New York mansion. During that year, she had a front row seat to what went on behind these closed doors and saw Ghislaine Maxwell in full flight.
She would turn like that, and like as school's getting out, she's like, I've got to get the nubiles. I'm going to get the nubiles.
What did she mean by that, and what did you witness?
So several times I was in the car with her, and she would ask the driver to stop the car. And she'd dash across to the school or the park or wherever she was going, and she would, like, write down her phone number for a child, a young girl. And then I'd see that child at the house. And she'd say, they're auditioning. You know, I found a model in the park. And I thought it was really strange because I did see a couple girls in braces. And I've never seen a model with braces.
So you're hearing just a snippet. This is from the 60 Minutes Australia. I'm sure you've seen many, many documentaries and 60 Minutes and other news reports surrounding the Jeffrey Epstein case. Now, as you know, Jeffrey Epstein died in prison by suicide, and in his right-hand man, so to speak, quote-unquote, has been his former girlfriend, Ghislaine, and that's who we're talking about this morning. One of the big news stories we're following is Ghislaine Maxwell is going to be starting her trial today in New York City. You were hearing testimony from Maria Farmer, who was a victim, an alleged victim of Jeffrey Epstein, and she's also claiming of Maxwell back in the 90s, but she is not the only one who has said Ghislaine had a big role in these sex trafficking crimes. I wanted to talk to Bill Bloss about this case. The biggest reason is because Ghislaine's brother has come out and said, hey, she's going to take the fall for someone who did the crimes that she did not commit. So I wanted to talk to Bill Bloss. He's with Koskoff, Koskoff and Beter. He is our legal expert on the show. Again, he's not involved with the trials. He's not involved with the case. But I love to get his legal expertise on these matters. Good morning, Bill. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Melissa. You're welcome.
So I'm really into this case, not in a weird way, but I've been following it for quite some time. And then obviously when Jeffrey Epstein, you know, ended up passing away, I had a very strong feeling that Ghislaine Maxwell would end up taking the fall for all of it, essentially. What is the worst, I guess, that could happen to her if in trial they find that she had a hand in these sex trafficking scams?
What's the worst that can happen to her? Well, she's facing really effectively the rest of her life in prison. She turned 60 later in December, and she's facing up to 80 years. Now, she probably would not get the statutory maximum, but, you know, the federal judges treat sex crimes involving minors quite seriously, as you would hope they would. And so effectively, she's looking at a long time.
I mean, in these cases, and like I said, I've been studying the documentaries. I'm sure with your legal background, you've been watching it as well. But, you know, it does sound like from the victims who have come forward in several documentaries and reports that she's kind of there for everything. And my understanding is that there are going to be young ladies testifying in these trials. You know, do you think that that's enough to give her a life sentence?
Well, see, it's not a crime to be there when somebody else is committing a crime. It is a crime, though, to help somebody commit a crime. And she's charged with, I think the words of the indictment uses are enticing or transporting minors to cross state lines for the purposes of sex. If it is proved that that's what she did, that she was more than just there, then yeah, absolutely, she can get convicted and probably would be on that evidence.
Now, is there a way she could get out of any of this because Jeffrey Epstein isn't here? He's not present?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, the jury, I suspect the defense will try to kind of at least paint the picture of, look, this is Epstein's case. It's not my case. I wasn't even arrested until after Epstein was killed, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, she was hiding.
Right. She was found in New Hampshire somewhere.
Right. She was found really only because the FBI was able to track her mobile phone using some high technology. But in any event, I'm sure that they will try to paint the picture that, you know, I'm not Jeffrey Epstein. And so you can't convict me for what he did. They are going to put on some evidence. I thought it's kind of interesting. They're going to put on some expert testimony from a psychologist named Elizabeth Loftus, who is a memory expert, if you will. And she's going to apparently testify about the unreliability of memory around traumatic events. She also testified in the Harvey Weinstein trial, and it didn't go so well there, obviously. But and then they're also going to put on a psychiatrist named Park Dietz, who is an expert in criminality, to talk about also things involving memory because these events, the charged events happened in the mid 90s. That is a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that that is certainly an avenue they're going to take a look at. Sure.
It's interesting. Bill Bloss is here. He's our legal expert on the show. He's with Koskoff, Koskoff and Beter. You know, when you watch these documentaries, there are some very high-profiled people who are mentioned as having friendships with Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, one of which has been Prince Andrew. And I'm curious because one of the things that has continued to it hasn't really come to fruition yet, but I find it interesting that Maxwell is the connection between Jeffrey Epstein and Prince Andrew. And I'm wondering if her being on, you know, in trial now, if that's going to have a ripple effect. Like, do we potentially see him going or getting arrested at some point? I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
Well, you would think that with the amount of investigation and the amount of time that's passed, that at least the FBI has done everything it's going to do in terms of arrests. However, there is still an investigation in the Virgin Islands. You remember where there was Epstein had this island down there where apparently misconduct occurred, at least according to some reports. And so there is a possibility of crimes coming out of that investigation. The Virgin Islands authorities are actually trying to get Maxwell to testify in that investigation. In order for them to do that, she's refused so far. For them to do that, she'd have to get immunity. And obviously, the federal prosecutors in New York are not really interested in messing up their prosecution with giving her immunity in the Virgin Islands. So, you know, so it remains to be seen. Are there other shoes to drop? That's quite possible. You know, the statute of limitations on sex crimes is very long, and there certainly can be more that comes out of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bill Bloss, we certainly are going to be watching this case as well as some other high-profile cases, and we always appreciate that we can get your legal expertise on all of them. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
Well, here we are. We are full-fledged in the holiday season. And even though we're told it's the most wonderful time of the year, oh my Lord, is the stress on high. It totally is. So how do we manage the stress without having it ruin our relationships? It's a great question. And for that, I turn it to Bob Donovan, who's our marriage consultant. Good morning, Bob. Happy post-Thanksgiving. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good, Melissa. Great to hear your voice again.
I know,
great,
I miss you.
Great setup, by the way, as we head into December, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's stressful. I was thinking about this. Yeah, I was thinking about this, you know, last week, knowing I was coming on Monday. And again, with the Thanksgiving holiday behind us, it kind of is a traditional kickoff, right, for the holiday season. And, man, with that comes a host of issues with, you know, competing demands, maybe travel issues, maybe some family triggers that we all have from time to time. So I got to thinking, how can couples manage this better? And I've got a few things to talk about, but overarching that, PTA.
But PTA, like the PTA meetings at school?
No, that's one thing to avoid.
Yes. Yes. I'm so glad you said that, Bob. Yes.
Yeah,
no, what do you mean by PTA? What are you talking about?
Plan, talk, and agree.
Oh, well, there you go.
Plan, talk, and agree. And that's, so I'm going to talk about that a little bit. But and all these issues, I mean, if couples really just took a step back and plan for what they're facing, discuss what's happening, and then, again, come to agreement, that's generally what I want to talk about.
Well, let's do it.
The first thing, really, is just to acknowledge the stress and either step up or ask for help. And what I mean by that, I think there's two types of people that go into December. The people that are going to plow through it, and then they have the ostriches.
The ostriches who stick their heads in the sand.
Exactly. I was an ostrich for a lot of years, and and Karen was a plow through it, right? So, you know, her nature is just to, you know, buck up and do the shopping and do everything. And, you know, I had a demanding job, but that's no excuse for not helping out. So I would just let her. So that just created a lot of stress.
Mm.
So the first thing really is sit down and talk about, like, what the month looks like and how you're feeling about what's ahead. So, you know, typically a conversation goes like this, right? And typically the wife handles a lot of the shopping generally. I mean, husbands do, but generally it's the women. Mm-hmm. So generally the wife will say, wow, with December coming up, with Christmas shopping and all the things I have to do, I'm really, really feeling stressed. And the typical answer of a husband is, well, let me help you with how to manage your time better. And guess where that conversation goes?
It goes to you sleeping on the couch because it's not about our time. Why don't you offer to buy some stuff?
Exactly.
I'm sorry. I'm not yelling at you, Bob. I'm just expressing myself.
Exactly. Well, that's what happens, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. It's true.
So the first thing is just sit down, acknowledge what you're facing, acknowledge the stress, discuss it, talk about how you're feeling. Mm-hmm. And by all means, if it's the wife, like husbands, don't give advice. I have a term that's called understanding precedes advice giving. So mm-hmm. just get in there and just understand what's going on. Like I said.
Not to interrupt you, Bob, but you know what? Sometimes it's funny. Just getting my husband's ear sometimes is all I need. Like the acknowledgement of, hey, you know, like, do you want? Because here's the thing is my husband, God bless him. He's a wonderful man. I wouldn't trade him for the world. But he'll ask, can I do anything? And I'll say, no, that almost stresses me out more. But I'd rather him say, you know, hey, like, what, let's, like, we've already gone over a game plan. What, you know, what goes on with Chase? What goes on with family? Who does what? I mean, we're not supposed to, but we already told each other, like, who's each other's secret Santas for the family, secret Santa and everything. Because it's easier to just map out what are we responsible for? What are the expectations? And even though I'm doing probably 95% of the shopping, it's just nice that he at least takes the time to want to talk about it and to understand what is on my plate.
Husbands generally totally underestimate that. They think solving the problem means solving the problem and giving advice. And they don't understand solving the problem means giving your wife your ear, like lending your heart, like understanding, just coming alongside her. And maybe, you know what, maybe there's something he can do. If he took one or two things off your plate that he could do.
Sure.
That at least is a burden off your shoulder. So. Yeah, you're ahead of the game with most couples. Most couples don't do that.
I don't know about that. I think we've had too many fights where we finally have said, let's get help because we've thought about this so many times. Yeah. I think it's more of the latter, but I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, we're talking to Bob Donovan, who's our marriage consultant on the show. And while this is a very joyous time for many people, it's also an insanely stressful time. And one of the things that Bob really wants to dive into this morning is plan, talk, and agree. So understanding your spouse, where they're coming from, don't give them advice. What else can you suggest this morning, Bob?
Yeah, I think another thing is, again, I look at the time demands that December brings and just think about, you know, gift buying, gift giving, holiday gatherings, whether it's at work, decorating the house, putting up the tree. If you're hosting or traveling, again, in December, some work has very year-end demands that are very consuming. So, in fact, I'm getting stressed just talking about this. You know,
I'm sweating.
Time,
yes.
Time demands is very – so it's really important to set boundaries together. And couples in this culture – I don't know why it is. I think it's getting harder and harder for couples to set boundaries together. But you need to do that. And I know Karen and I – we've already said no to a couple of things that are coming our way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to do this together. What are you going to do together? And more importantly, what aren't you going to do together? So the key word there is what? Together.
Right.
Right.
Well, setting those boundaries. And I think, too, what's where again, the support of your spouse comes in, whether it's the guy or the girl, it doesn't really matter. But, you know, a lot of times when you are committing to things, Bob, it's because of past pressures. So if it's something like you've got three family parties and, you know, it's the same crowd, it's just different houses, you know, maybe that's where you turn to your spouse and you say, look, I can't do this. Can you step up and tell me that it's okay to say no? You know, like sometimes it's as simple as just it, like when Derek will sit there and say, Melissa, you're taking on the world right now and this is completely unnecessary. I'm going to put a no down on this. Like, I'm going to take this one and just send out in the group chat, hey, we're not coming today, guys. Sorry, it's not happening. And immediately it just feels better because we feel this insane pressure to people please, essentially.
Yep. Yeah. No, that's exactly. I love what you said, that sometimes one spouse feels obligated to do something and they need the encouragement of the other spouse. Again, it's okay to say no. Mm-hmm. I got a support behind this. So, Yeah, that's really, really significant. Mm-hmm. You know, the other massive pressure here, obviously, is money, right?
I mean, gifts
come with, unless you make everything, I mean, gifts come with buying and spending money. So, and this is where it gets a little tricky because couples generally aren't good with this. So I would say that's, again, plan, talk, and agree on what you're going to spend. But you got to be cautious here that you don't turn into the budget police.
Mm-hmm.
So, right? Typically, there's a spender saver with a husband and wife. It doesn't matter who it is. But
again,
agree generally on what you're going to spend and try your best to stay within that. And just one spouse just might need support, not a police person to say, well, you know, we're $5 over our budget. Like, well, that's the last thing he or she needs. So,
right. You know, to make sure you strike that balance of being aligned on a budget. It's the most wonderful time of the year until you start fighting about gifts and where do I go and who do I do my events with. And holy moly, you spent what? These are just some of the many questions that couples have as they are fighting their way through the December month and all the holidays that are coming our way. So we want to help you manage your stress a little bit better as a couple. Keep you from fighting and parting ways. That's certainly not the goal here. So we want to make sure you stay together and that you're happy and that you actually do have a joyous season. For that, we have Bob Donovan, our marriage consultant here. Bob's been talking to us this morning about what's called plan, talk, and agree. So, Bob, let's talk about the next item here, being a time management team. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So, once again, it's a little similar to what we talked about just a little while ago, but there is so many competing demands in December. I mean, number one, just life is busy, right? Without even December, just life is busy. Throw on top of that, the month of December, what it comes with that, with the holidays, it just is an immense challenging time for couples. So I think that a lost art is kind of time management, as a marriage team. And it's a good way that you come together as a husband and wife and plan for how you're going to spend your time. Again, whether it's traveling, I know this year we're going to be hosting, so that's created a whole new layer of complexity for us. But sitting down and really figuring out what you're going to do, what you're not going to do, how you're going to spend your time, who's going shopping when, and decorating the house, it's all that. So it's really coming together and managing your time. Again, together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw another one into there that, you know, and we're talking about even how we set this up, Melissa. You know, we really have to think about, like, our mindset, think about what we think about. And, like, if we're at a point going into this month feeling stressed and thinking about all these things that overwhelm us, mm-hmm. they will overwhelm us. You know, you have to really, and I'm going to kind of land the plane on this last point is really make first things first. I mean, December is a incredible, joyful time. It really is. Whether you're, you know, a Christian like ourselves that celebrate the birth of Jesus, how do you make that the priority and not shopping and gift giving and those other things? And, you know, whether it's, you know, Karen yesterday, she has an Advent tree, which is really cool, a very unique thing that she got. And we do that. Every last Sunday with the first Sunday in Advent. You know, there's holiday movies that we watch. There's traditions that we have. There's books that we read. So, you know, really using that month to think about why it exists in the first place,
mm-hmm.
to celebrate the birth of Jesus, or if you're the Jewish faith, to celebrate Hanukkah. So really check your mind. And if you're going down that rabbit hole of stress and worry and anxiety, and again, those are real, and we gave you some tips on how to manage that, but try to shift that to really why we celebrate the season the way we do.
Oh, it's so true. I mean, think about it, Bob. We've commercialized so much of this holiday season, but at the core of it, it's a huge part of it is the miracles that go on. You know, take Hanukkah, for example, the fact that you have a small band of Jews, the Maccabees, who take on this massive army to bring back control over the temple. They get it. And then when they finally get to the temple, what should have been only one day's worth of oil actually lasts for 8 nights, which is just phenomenal. You look at the story of Jesus, you have a mom who literally was given a child when she had never even been with a man before. I mean, the whole season is supposed to be about really the miracles that have gone on before our time, and we've so commercialized it. I mean, it's unbelievable, really.
Yep, you're totally right. And again, unless you're intentional, whether it's watching the Nativity, which is an incredible movie, about reading books about, I mean, really, The Women of Christmas is a great book that my wife reads every year. I mean, whatever it is, right? Just getting your mind locked in on why we celebrate this time and why it should be special. And again, it's intention, not getting overrun by the stress. And again, I'm not diminishing the pressure, but managing that, but really checking your mind and celebrate, you know, what this special season is. Again, if you're a Christian or Jewish, it's an amazing time to celebrate our faith. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think you make a very good point. I'm glad you brought that back in as well, Bob. And I thank you so much. I think these are great tips. If people want to get more of your advice, maybe they have a particular issue they're dealing with, especially going into this holiday season, how can they contact you?
Yep, that'd be great. Yeah. So it's bdonovan@blackrock.org. And don't forget, right? PTA doesn't mean Parent Teacher Association. Plan, talk, and agree.
Yeah, no. Go to the Bob's PTA. Don't go to the school's PTA. Now that stresses me out, but that's a whole other segment. Bob, thank you so much. We'll talk again before Christmas, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
All right, Melissa, thanks.
Thank you.